this week we're joined by a He-Man and a She-Lady. It's Nicholas Galitzine and Camila Mendez, aka He-Man and Teela, stars of Masters of the Universe.
Yay!
Exciting. Plus, the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast. It is grateful for the contributions of Tom Hiddleston and Damson Idris, but it misses the glory days of Soccer Aid, where you'd have a bewildered Woody Harrelson or Mike Myers running around a football pitch for reasons not even they entirely understand. Not these athletic specimens actually being good at football. It's just not on. Anyway, hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I am joined in the pod booth by three colleagues of such lethal cunning. Geek Queen Helen O'Hara is here. How are you?
Hello. What's happening with the
Do you never watch Soccer Aid? Do you not watch Soccer Aid?
No, not really.
Yeah, the charity football tournament that's on every year.
Okay.
And used to, back in the day, attract like properly big names like Mike Myers and Will Ferrell and Woody Harrelson.
Okay.
Like movie stars would come along and they would play in front in England.
Sure.
with other celebrities.
Yeah.
And football players, retired football players. Diego Maradona was in the very first Soccer Aid. People like that. And they would do this for charity, and it's broadcast every year on Soccer Aid. It's co-created by Robbie Williams.
Okay.
And now we are reduced to people like, I've never heard of this person, Angry Ginge. So I'm very grateful for the likes of Tom Hiddleston and Damson Idris, who played at this year's Soccer Aid just the other day.
Okay.
And Damson Idris scored a very good goal for the England team.
Okay.
So well done him.
But you're still upset because they are
I want to see people who like football and have been invited to go along to this, but they don't really know what it is.
Right.
And they take to the pitch and they're terrible at football, and I want to see those people.
Right, okay, yeah, fair enough.
That's what I also want, people I've heard of.
Right.
That's what I want.
Wow, okay.
But, you know, it's for charity. A man who does a lot of work for charity is the mad titan of movies, James Dyer.
Hello, James. You explained that Soccer Aid stuff to me, because I'd noticed that Hiddles was doing a lot of football on the social media recently, and I could not for the life of me work out why. So this is, it's all clear now.
I mean, it was all clear in the stuff he was doing on social media as well, because it was explained.
But I was seeing it with the sound off while doom scrolling. I'm like, oh, Hiddles is playing football again. What the fuck is he doing?
No, he's looking scrolling. That's
very
doom scrolling.
That's
Robert Downey Jr.
I see what you did there. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Dan Jolin's here.
Hooray!
Ooh, football. Yeah.
He loves football. A bit of football.
I do like when they foot the ball.
Yes. Hello, Dan. And it's been a long time since you've been on the podcast, Dan. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Usually you get me in when there's some movie coming out with guys with swords or something. That's usually what happens. If there's a film with someone with long hair and a sword, get in, Dan.
Yeah. Well, listen, I had sent you guys, because it's time for a question, and I'd sent you guys earlier on, I'd said, hey, the question is going to be about great movie holidays that you wish you had taken.
Yeah.
But I've just seen a question that I think might be more up your street, Dan.
Mm.
You say you're the swordsman, right?
Oh, no.
I say no such thing, but yes.
Here's a question from lstarmer96_ via Instagram, which is where I'm taking questions these days. CTAH1976 is my Instagram name. Best swords in cinema, in honor of He-Man's power sword. I think that might be this week's question.
I think the one that instantly springs to mind the moment you said that was Conan's broadsword.
You mean the sword that I myself have wielded?
Yes. Well,
the Atlantean sword.
I have actually wielded the Sword of Power.
I don't know. This is my fault.
Mine was handed to me by Conan himself, who keeps it in an umbrella stand in his office. I'm just saying.
That is actually really
my sword
awesome.
Is bigger than your
that
sword.
Conan O'Brien.
No, you win.
Yes,
he wins.
That's right.
A sword in his office.
That's true.
Or you mean Arnold Schwarzenegger?
That's the one, yes.
Okay.
But the Atlantean sword, which of course had a cameo in Stranger Things.
Indeed,
season 4.
My Atlantean sword thing was actually something I'd wanted to do all the way through the interview, and I forgot about it because I was very enraptured with the interview, and it wasn't until I was walking back down the corridor I went, oh my god, I forgot to hold the sword. And so awkwardly I literally made his assistant bring me back into the office where Arnold had moved on to other things just so that I could wield the
and
sword.
Was Arnold at his desk and going, get out of here.
I'm done with you.
I am doing paperwork.
Yeah, basically. But he then He unsheathed his sword and handed it to
steady on.
Yeah. All right. We should say, for the sake of the question and just for the clarification for the listeners at home, we're talking about actual swords and not peni.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
That's true.
Steel swords, not pork. Got it.
Yes. Yeah. So what is your answer,
so
Dan?
So he's gone for Conan.
He's gone for Conan.
I mean, that's my first instant answer, the Atlantean sword wielded by Conan.
Okay.
But also there's the bride Hattori Hanzo. Which is absolutely amazing. And on in a similar vein, the katana of Conor McLeod.
There can be
the
only
MacLeod.
One, Dan. Mm-hmm.
So you're going for the katana, not the sword of Clan MacLeod that he wore.
No. I'm going for the katana that he inherited from
Ramirez.
Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez.
Yes, indeed.
You're Spanish peacock.
That's
I'm Egyptian.
Greetings, Highlander.
And there's that line about it's such a cool sword that it gets compared with like discovering a 747 in the 16th century or something like that. You know,
the metal's been folded like 600 times.
The katana that Conor McLeod has of the Clan MacLeod. Is that a better sword than the Hattori Hanzo sword that Dan was talking about from Kill Bill Volume 1? And again, please mention the name of the film.
I would say the Hattori Hanzo from Kill Bill Volume 1 is a better looking sword.
Yeah,
but there's just the coolness factor of the katana in Highlander.
I kind of helped him. As you have, Dan, I recently interviewed Russell Mulcahy, the director of Highlander, about the final battle between Conor McLeod of the Clan MacLeod and the Kurgan of the Clan. What the fuck?
In Highlander.
He's just a Kurgan, isn't he?
Massive Kurgan.
He's a massive Kurgan in Highlander. And obviously, those swords, when they hit each other, they generate sparks. Yeah. And I didn't know that they had basically hooked them up to car batteries so that whenever the swords clashed, they would generate these sparks. And Russell Mulcahy said that final fight is almost entirely Christopher Lambert and Clancy Brown doing their own shit.
We have to talk about the Sword of the Six-Fingered Man from The Princess Bride.
Absolutely.
It always comes down to the Sword of the Six-Fingered Man.
No, I agree. I approve of this message.
It is one of the all-time great duels, sword duels in cinema. Yeah. And it is also fought with one of the most beautiful swords in cinema. It's got the sort of almost filigree, but the wire-wrapped handle to kind of protect your hand while you're fighting. It's beautifully balanced. Everybody who looks at it is like, ooh, that's a nice sword. It's a good sword.
Yeah,
his father labored for a year to make that sword.
That is in many ways on brand, but I was absolutely convinced you would go with Andoril forged from the shards of Narsil.
Look what I have written down on my phone.
What I have wrought,
let me
peasant.
See. Let me see.
Top of the list. Andoril.
And then beneath that, Dark Saber.
I was thinking about the actual coolest sword in Star Wars. And like, I'm not saying what's done with it is the coolest, but like,
I don't think it's
in terms of looks, it is the Dark Saber. The Dark Saber is unbelievably cool.
I think Maul's double-ended lightsaber is better.
Yeah, but then it's not really a sword anymore then at that point. You're getting, like, that's a staff.
Yeah, you're getting into pole arm territory there, James.
Yeah, except, it still cut your legs off.
Yeah, but that's... So many instruments.
Is that the bar here? If it'll cut your legs off, it's in. Yeah.
So would a car. If it was driven fast enough, it would cut your legs off. That's not a sword. Okay. I'm not wielding a car.
You could try.
But I think it's a lightsaber, isn't it? Because it's just a cool... Yes, Dan, it is. Dan?
No.
You come into my home and this is how you behave.
A lightsaber is a cool weapon, but it's not a sword.
It's a more elegant weapon from more...
Yeah, I've got it in the case here. Servizo Krista! There you go.
Thanks, James. It's cool. It's really cool. It reinvented the sword. That's how much of a genius George Lucas was, Dan. He took something that was sharp and slicey, and he made it buzzy, and also slicey. Yeah, and it's so fucking cool. And swords don't do that sound effect when they go, when you wave them through the air and they don't hit anything. It's just like whoosh. Nobody likes a whoosh. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
It is amazing.
But I just think if we're talking about movie swords, we should restrict it to actual swords.
It's a laser sword.
They are forged in a blacksmith's.
They're literally described in the screenplay, I believe, as laser swords. That's literally what they are.
This upsets me. I'm going to have to side with Dan on this.
I don't.
I'm sorry.
Look. I'm overruling. It's laser sword. That's what I'm saying. It's laser sword.
Anyway, we haven't talked enough about Andoril.
Tell me more about that.
So this is the sword forged from the shards of Narsil, which is the sword that was broken.
And this is in Ace Ventura?
This is in The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, The Lord of the Rings. Okay.
It's the sword of the King of Gondor, which is reforged as part of Aragorn's birthright to become King of Gondor again to lead, to make him into a leader of men, essentially. He is, he takes up the shards that were Narsil that become Anduril. It is forged into a very standard looking sword, to be honest, nicely balanced, quite a lengthy hilt.
It's no Glamdring.
I've got one at home.
There you go. You can actually, so it's interesting. If you go to, for example, Toledo. It's okay, that's how you announce this. That's how you know it's the city in America. It's Toledo, Ohio. If I'm talking about Toledo in Spain, it's Toledo.
There are holes in my story. Holy Toledo.
That's right, because it was the seat of the church in Spain. You're correct.
I've been to it.
It's a beautiful city.
I've been there.
Beautiful city.
He sat on the seat.
My point is...
I was asked to leave.
Oh, no. My point is, you can buy... The sword of Conor MacLeod, of the clan MacLeod there, not the katana, as I remember. Okay. You can buy a copy of Anduril, you can buy a copy of Excalibur.
Wow.
From the film Excalibur, from the Borman movie, or is it another Excalibur?
I think it's meant to be just a generic Excalibur.
You can't have a generic Excalibur.
Yeah, also you really should get it from the gift shop. It should be handed to you from a lady in a lake. So.
Yeah, well, look, tarts and lakes handing out swords is no basis for a form of government, okay?
Not some farcical aquatic ceremony. Was it supreme executive powers derived from a mandate from the masses, not some farcical aquatic ceremony? That's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. But
can I do a shout out for the worst movie sword?
Okay, I was going to suggest one more good movie sword.
Okay,
yes,
no, let's do good first and we'll finish with my worst.
Okay. I would like to wobble for Braveheart's extremely large greatsword.
Claymore.
Because when he throws the claymore and it lands in, it does have a nice wobble to it.
We should say that when we play Empire Dungeons and Dragons, your character, James, Sir John DeLuther,
mm-hmm.
has a sword so big. Whenever I think of this sword, I think of, there's a character in, I think, Tekken 2, who has an enormous sword. I can't remember what the character's name is.
Like a Buster Sword.
Like Cloud's
Buster Sword.
Yeah, it's the size of a bus.
Yes.
And Sir John... Every time he takes his sword out, it takes him about a week to unsheathe.
Yeah, Dan, my paladin attacks always with disadvantage because his sword is so comically large.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which oath is he?
I don't know, I have a loath. I'm still level two.
We genuinely killed Helen, I think.
He keeps falling over backwards.
This is genuinely true. On multiple occasions, I've rolled natural ones and just fallen over backwards with the weight of the sword. It's amazing. Really absolutely farcical.
I've got such FOMO.
He uses it for everything. Down a door, killing defenseless apes. He does zombies.
He's a fucking liability, Sir John is.
Mm. He's absolutely awful.
Amazing.
And he spent all the proceeds of our first mission on this sword.
On this sword, this massive
Without
sword.
Without consulting
it's possessed by a demon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It whispers to him in the night.
This is great.
Yeah. Anyway.
This is not the time or the place, but I want to hear about everyone's characters.
Helen, what's your character called?
Skahach.
I'm sorry about that. But what's your character called?
Look, she's named after Cuchulainn's teacher, who was a Scottish warrior called Skahach.
Brilliant. Is she an elf?
Yes.
She is a wood elf.
She is an elf. Yeah.
There you go. I thought that was very wood elf sounding.
Chris is
an elven mage called Vendrat the Vertical who has a fetish for cod pieces.
Yeah. Mm.
When you say mage, is he wizard or sorcerer?
He's a wizard.
Yeah,
he's a wizard. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, good. Wizard. Okay.
Yeah. He has a dark past, Dan. That's all I'm going to say on that one. And Nick's character is is he a dwarf called Growly?
No. Growly is his kind of like familiar.
No, that's Growly Junior.
Oh, you're right. That's Growly Junior. Yeah. It's Growly the Parsimonious.
Yes, he has adopted along the way like some sort of lizard thing.
A kobold
that he calls Growly Junior. That he sends into missions to investigate places because he's expendable.
Dungeons and Dragons is the best game ever created.
Yeah. But only James has an amazing sword. I don't even know what Fendrak has, and I'm not even sure what she has. But a bow? It's all good. A bow, maybe.
I've got
and a nice ribbon. And the sword I was talking about is, of course, that belonging to Blade.
Laser.
Oh, that is a cool sword.
Blazer. It's a good sword because it has a handle that
does
little tricks, and he throws it up and it wedges in a crack. Stop it. And the handle moves around and then it...
He's got the little bits pop out the handle and they're silver.
Spiky bits.
If he doesn't flip the switch, he'll blow your hand up.
Yep. Absolutely. So, Blade. And he uses it to kill so many motherfucking vampires. Blade 2. It is so cool. Helen has put her hands to her head in the universal sign of her, oh fuck, I've just thought of one. Yes, please, Helen.
The Sword of Green Destiny. Crouching Tiger, that's Hidden Dragon.
That's a decent
that sword. That's got a very good wobble.
It's got a great wobble.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful sword.
Oh, now Chris is doing the hands to the head with the mouth open thing.
There's the animated singing sword in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
That is good.
What about cutlasses? Anyone like a good pirate movie? Does Jack Sparrow have a good cutlass?
Kind of basic swords. Like, in that case,
Jason and the Argonauts. There's good sword fights in that. Yeah, the Adventures of Robin Hood. I know it's not cutlasses, but that's a good. Those good. Yeah, but
those are more fencing swords, aren't they?
Yeah. But they're not like character swords. Mm. What we're talking about here are character swords. Do you know what I'm saying? Like these—they're all just kind of like background swords, or they're just props. But they're not like a character sword.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. So this obviously isn't a Mount Rushmore, but if you were to choose one above all else, Helen and Andrew?
Andoril,
yes.
Yeah. It even has competition in The Lord of the Rings from like Sting, Glamdring, all the rest, but Sting. I think it has to be Andoril.
Helen's gone for it, Andrew. Dan, who have you gone for?
Well, if this is the Mount Rushmore of swords, is the...
I'm saying it is because some people...
You could say that.
I said it's not a Mount Rushmore. But we're choosing one anyway.
Okay. Well, think of it not a Mount Rushmore, but kind of think of it as like a sword from the stone thing. So we're sticking, each of us allowed to stick one sword in the stone.
This is good.
So what sword will you put in the stone?
So these are the swords in the stone.
I kind of feel like it should be a katana, but honestly, I've just got to go with my heart here and say Conan's Atlantean sword.
My Atlantean sword that Conan gave to me, that one. Yeah, okay, fine.
James?
I'm going to blame Dan for this, but in honor of Sir John de Luther, going to choose Cloud Strife's Buster Sword, and I can do it because it technically is in a film, because Final Fantasy VII Advent Children is a film.
Explain the story, because you haven't mentioned it once.
Absolutely massive, from the video game Final Fantasy VII, but we're saying this film. It's much like Sir John's sword. It's fucking enormous. It's bigger than the guy who wields it. It's just a huge sort of sheet of metal with a handle. It's quite extraordinary.
I don't want to speculate about what you're compensating for, so let's just move on.
I'm going ultra vanilla here. I'm going lightsaber, but I can't tell. Is it going to be blue or green?
Well, you wouldn't be able to because it'd just be the handle and it wouldn't go in the stone.
I ignited, you fucking idiot.
You can't leave it on all the time.
Yes, you can.
You know what happens? You just go straight through the earth, like in Rick and Morty.
Like you haven't thought of this at all.
I have thought this through. All right, blade. I'm going to go for blade sword, and put it in the stone. So we got the blade's blade. We've got, what have you got? The Buster sword. We've got
Conan's sword.
Sorry, Connor McLeod, you've been eliminated. Wow. And we have Andrew from The Lord of the Rings.
Andoril.
Which is very, very exciting. And we put these all in the stone, and then you guess what, guys? We pull back to reveal that the stone is Mount Rushmore. That's right! Oh. This has been Mount Rushmore. Beep, 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 beep.
Can I say my worst sword now?
Oh, God, yes.
Go on.
Just in the film The Sword and the Sorcerer. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Yes?
A long time ago.
It's a sword and it's got three blades.
Three blades? No, I don't remember this.
That sit side by side and come out of the hilt. So it's like...
I believe that's called a trident.
It's like, no, but it's three
is
actual...
Is this a blade trinity?
I mean, yeah. But if that isn't stupid enough that it's got three blades... Two of the blades shoot off, so they fire through the air.
Oh no!
As like missiles.
This isn't the worst sword. This is the best sword.
It's really bad. It looks really bad. It looks bad when all three blades are on it. It looks, the effect of it shooting through the air is really bad as well. And it's just no.
I'd quite like to have a Batleth.
That's definitely not a sword.
It's a sword.
It's not a sword.
You tell that to a Klingon.
Look at the way they wield it. That's definitely not a sword.
Right, so you make that argument with Lieutenant Worf.
For the people who don't know what that is.
It's a Klingon sword from Star Trek.
It's a Klingon weapon from Star Trek.
It's more of an axe.
Oh, well, you're more of an axe.
I would say it's closer to an axe as well.
Okay.
What about a Mechleth?
How do you spell it?
Batleth. BAT-LETH, I think.
Yeah.
I believe it's actually spelled, there's an apostrophe in there. I think it's a bat elf.
Of course there's an apostrophe in there. There's a fucking Klingons. They love their apostrophes.
We have the pizza cutter
version. That's not a sword.
That's not a sword. That's a sword.
It's an axe without a handle.
You're an axe without a handle.
He's got you there. He is. You are.
Where's the handle? Where is it?
Oh, no.
Help me find it.
Is there a great sword in the MCU? I don't know that there was.
Only axes, really.
Axes and hammers.
There would be, right? Well,
there was that one at the end of the Eternals.
That's right. That's
with Kit Harington getting the sword and then Blade over his shoulder going, be careful or something.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see him soon in the Blade film.
Or in the Black Knight film.
Or in Eternals 2.
Maybe they'll all be coming.
On the same day.
Oh. Gore the God Butcher's sword. That's like your character's sword from out of...
Yes.
And he sort of, when he walks along, he drags it and it drags on the ground
that's
in a really
a good
cool
sword.
Way.
Yeah,
that's yeah,
a good
one.
All right.
The God Killer, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, something like that. I knew we'd get the MCU in there somehow. excellent stuff. Well, thank you, L. Starmer. But I think we've taken a question from L. Starmer recently, so I am hereby...
deleting that whole question.
Banning L. Starmer from... suggesting a question for at least 1 week.
Okay.
I'm going to let someone else have a go.
What about Keir Starmer?
Yes, Keir Starmer. Listen, yeah. Mr. Prime Minister, if you're listening to the podcast, and I know that you are, if you have any questions for us on how we can help you to run the country better, I don't know. Just a suggestion, then please get in touch. I am a CTAH1976. Your name doesn't have to be Starmer, by the way. All right.
Right. Yeah. Open just to saying. All people.
Yeah. Listen, anyway, shall we have a little break?
Hurrah.
And then we can come back recharged and refreshed and have a big old sword fight.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
See you in a sec. Okay, we are back, folks. We put our swords away. You'll be delighted to know we're not going to chop each other's heads off for this next section of the show anyway, which is movie news discussion time. Very exciting indeed. I will say, obviously, we've got lots of questions this week on Instagram. We got one from NikkiRR70, who asked, is the new Adam Wingard film secretly The Guest 2? Discuss. And brackets, and please let the answer be yes, close brackets. And I think the answer might be yes. Shall we discuss it? The new Adam Wingard film is called Onslaught.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to talk about this movie, which the trailer for which came out this week?
Yeah, so this trailer sees Adria Arjona living in a sort of trailer park in the desert with her little girl. She's got friends around. She's clearly got a background in combat. She's served in the military. And something is going on nearby, like helicopters are going on overhead. Rebecca Hall is up to no good. You know, something's going on. And it turns out, wouldn't you know it, that the government is breeding or training or brainwashing or, you know, cyborging, I don't know, a generation of very scary killer people.
Super soldiers, you might say,
but not in a good, like, cuddly, like, you know, Stars and Stripes dance number kind of a way, who are being designed for use on the civilian population of the country. And they
Topical.
Are, yeah, and there's yeah. going to be a bit of a clash. And I'm hoping that the lady wins.
I suspect the lady will win. This is the new film, of course, from Adam Wingard, who directed the last two Godzilla and Kong movies and has directed a ton of really fun films like Your Next.
Mm-hmm.
But the film in question here is The Guest, which came out, well, over a decade ago now and was a really, really fun black comedy action thriller starring Dan Stevens as a super soldier turned into a psycho killing machine and was so much fun. And they talked about a sequel for a long, long time, Adam Wingard and his writing partner, Simon Barrett. And I have a feeling this might be that.
Yeah.
This might be that sequel because it's playing in the same territory. Dan Stevens is also in this movie, but it's not in the trailer. I'm wondering if we're in a sort of M. Night Shyamalan Unbreakable Split type situation here where he walks up at the end and we lead into the next film, which will be properly merging these two worlds together. Might be completely wrong about that, but Jimbo, you seem pretty excited about this prospect.
Well, I mean, it looked absolutely mad, doesn't it? It looks wild, it's exciting, it looks bombastic and explosive, and the thought of it being a guest crossover just makes it even better. And I look forward to the third film in the series, The Guest 3, Guest House.
Paradiso.
So, yeah, exactly that, yes. But no, it looks loads of fun.
It does, doesn't it?
Especially because it dropped at the same time as the new David Leitch trailer. But
yes, we'll get on to that in a second. What a cast in Onslaught, by the way. Great to see Andrea Arshona getting like her props, and this is a proper star vehicle for her. She's absolutely terrific. But we also have the aforementioned Dan Stevens. We have Eric Wareheim from Tim and Eric. We have Reginald Phil Johnson,
yes,
who gets a big laugh line in this trailer. Michael Biehn, Rebecca Hall, of course, who also starred in Wingard's Godzilla movies. So I am very, very hyped. Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you react similarly to How to Rob a Bank, which is the aforementioned David Leitch trailer?
Yes. Which is about influencers robbing banks. As we all know, that's how
you
get clicks.
I knew they were up to no good.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they're doing. It's cash for clicks. This is essentially a group of people who are robbing banks and streaming it live on the internet, because that genuinely is our future, I fear. This is obviously David Leitch's new film. It's got Zoe Kravitz, Nicholas Holt, Anna Sawai from Shogun's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks loads of fun. Obviously, slightly satirical of internet culture as a whole.
But also, late stage capitalism.
Right, capitalism. But it just looks like a fun action film too.
Yeah.
It has some really good stuff in the trailer. So.
Yeah, the fact that John C. Reilly is leading the police response to this gang of bank robbers is really promising. And weirdly, he ends up in a sort of odd couple partnership thing with Zoe Kravitz's hacker. So I'm expecting some shenanigans there, if I'm honest. And then Nicholas Holt is leading the bank robbers with the likes of Pete Davidson in there as well.
Yeah.
This just looked so fun.
Please like and subscribe.
Yeah, I will both like and subscribe. Yes, please, to this.
Yeah, it looks really, really cool. Action-packed. Got a really, really lovely sense of humor. Both of these movies are scheduled to come out the same day in the States.
Ooh.
September 4th of this year. I don't know whether that's going to be the case over here in the good old US of K. I'm going to find out. Both of these look absolutely like made for me in some sort of lab. So very excited.
Very excited.
Can you name the other two films in which Nicholas Holt and Zoe Kravitz have co-starred?
Oh.
X-Men First Class.
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
And another film.
Oh, come on, guys.
Was he in a Fantastic Beast? No, he wasn't.
Oh, no.
No, he's got far more sense.
Oh, you did so well. There was so much promise. You were starting off so well.
Because she's not in Days of Future Past, so it's not that.
No, she's not.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Give us a clue.
What a day!
She's one of the wives in Mad Max Fury Road.
Right. What a lovely day!
Of course she is.
Yeah,
yes,
Mad Max
Fury Road. Epic fail.
Yeah, we should have seen that one coming.
Yeah, that was definitely.
That should have been the first. Driving very fast.
That is true.
At the moment, on the UK release schedule, September 4th is a big old day. We got Ridley Scott's The Dog Stars. We have How to Rob a Bank. And we have Hugh Jackman in The Death of Robin Hood, but as of yet, no Onslaught. So maybe we can lobby people to get Onslaught onto the biggest screens possible over here in UK.
We seem to be circling cinema releases and box offices. We should probably talk about some of the horror stuff that's going on. So Obsession, I believe, is tracking to become the most profitable film ever made.
Well, that's astonishing.
Which
is that true?
Apparently, it is. It's eyeing $250 million, and it was made for $750,000.
That's amazing.
Which is absolutely fucking wild. Meanwhile, Back Rooms is like the fourth biggest opening in history for a horror film.
Yeah,
which is insane. And they've, I believe, greenlit Back Rooms 2. Or certainly they're discussing it at the moment.
It's pretty baked in.
Of course, given the amount of money it's made.
Yeah.
But that is absolutely... Well, it has to be said, Dan, were on this podcast a little bit underwhelmed by Batrooms. Now, you were in the same screening that we were in when we saw it.
I loved it.
You loved it.
I loved it. It was like watching one of my own dreams.
That says more about you than the film, but sure.
Yeah. No. I thought it was, I thought it was wonderfully eerie, sort of a really sort of a novel approach to what makes horror. I mean, it's the uncanny valley. I mean, it also it kind of feels like, you know, the things that get conjured up are the kind of things that you see on Midjourney or something like that as well. So it's kind of
Much so. There was an AI slop element to it.
It is kind of like it's slop as horror.
Yeah.
And you know, that guy's what, 20?
Yes.
I think he was
16 when they first started discussing making this film.
Wow. He was 16 when he made his first short film.
Right, the YouTube one.
Backrooms, found footage.
Mm.
Just
to put these things into context a little bit, or context. So Backrooms is Kane Parsons' directorial debut. He is 12 years old and he made this movie. And it has opened enormously at the US box office. Yeah. Obsession has gone up at the box office every weekend it's been out.
Yeah, which three weeks is running.
It's not unprecedented.
Incredible.
It's very
but rare. It is very, very rare. Rare as hen's teeth. Yeah. And it has gone from fairly decent opening to $111 million in the States. It opened with $17 million. And even now, we have Your Darling Linda's Soul. But also, even now, Backrooms and Obsession are packing them in outside weekends. So they're Monday, as in 2 days ago, you know, Backrooms was making $7.6 million. Obsession was making $5.2 million. Mandalorian and Grogu, $2.2 million. Mm. So these movies have really broken out into the general consciousness in a way that it's unusual for horror films to do. Yeah. And both of them are obviously coming from YouTube. Yeah. I'm worried now we might get a Chicken Shop Date movie, which would be truly horrific. But what about you guys? What's your take on what's happening here? Is this people just loving YouTube horror, or is it word of mouth driving these movies?
I feel like it's word of mouth, and partly it's getting in that kind of Gen Z demographic, maybe even somewhat a Gen Alpha demographic, although they probably shouldn't be watching this. But it's getting younger people into the cinema, right? In a way that they often don't.
Yeah. I think it's part of that. It's speaking to them. I think they're also both incredible films. They've both got really good reviews. I still would put Obsession as my second best film of the year behind my beloved Project Hail Mary.
I was going to ask what number one was. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's absolutely astonishing. But I think they're both, you know, they're both offering something fresh, offering something new, offering a reason to go to the cinema. I think horror is still one of the best things to see with a crowd.
Yes, without a doubt.
And there's a reason to see that in the cinema rather than at your house. It's been the case now for a number of years that horror has been one of the most reliably profitable things at the box office, because again, it gets people out of the house and they will go see that collectively. And I don't actually understand why comedy has been struggling to do the same thing. Mm. And I think maybe a part of it has been a lack of such rapturously reviewed and fresh-feeling comedies.
Genuinely, when was the last time you saw a great comedy in the cinema?
I'm going to forget something that I loved. There's been stuff since then.
I mean, Honor Among Thieves has been since then.
That's not a straight comedy. That's another genre which has a lot of comedy in it.
I don't know.
I'm talking about like an actual...
I will push back on this for the simple reason that this is a personal opinion, I don't find straight comedy funny. I think the comedy has to come out of some form of drama. It can't be comedy for the sake of comedy, which is why I think Honor Among Thieves for me is a comedy. Yes, it's a fantasy drama underpinning it, but it's played for laughs.
Don't get me wrong. I love Honor Among Thieves, and I laughed a lot.
Wallace Island. Cop and whatnot. Yeah. Wallace Island.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great comedy.
Yeah. That's kind of like a love story.
That's a very, very low budget movie.
Tiny movie.
I think what you're talking about, Jimbo, is a kind of we've had a dearth over the last few years of the big star-driven American comedies.
We have.
Because the big studio comedy.
Yeah. Your Will Ferrells and your Adam Sandlers, you know, are largely doing stuff for streaming platforms now nowadays. So the days of them doing stuff like Get Hard or The House or Pixels for cinema release, like Happy Gilmore 2 was huge last year, but was on the small screen on Netflix. Yeah. So something like The Naked Gun, when it came out last year, the Liam Neeson, Akiva Schaffer reboot of The Naked Gun, really
that.
Fun.
Yeah.
I saw that on the big screen, and it was great to see it with an audience who got most of the jokes. But again, with that movie, it doesn't matter, because if you don't get that joke, here's another one 5 seconds later.
I think that's something that the studios have cultivated, because they have abandoned comedy rather than comedy abandoning them. Yeah. Something like The Naked Gun shows that the potential is still there, but they have trained audiences out of going to the cinema.
And a comedy is inherently funnier when seen with a crowd.
It just is. Yeah.
It's fundamentally funnier. But in the same way, I think a horror film is infinitely more fun when seen with a crowd, but also it's more comforting. I think if people find horrors hard to deal with, it's much easier to sit down and watch a horror film in a room full of people, and you get that awkward laughs afterwards, and everyone, like, the collective kind of exhalation. Whereas if you watch it on your own in your living room, you just shit yourself.
Wow. Real insights into your life today, James. Thanks.
I'm looking at last year's box office, and in terms of comedies, like out-and-out comedies, Yeah, there weren't that many on the big screen. But my best, and I said this on the Review of the Year podcast, my favorite cinema-going experience of last year was Final Destination Bloodlines, because that was absolutely incredible. It was a room full of people who were all dialed into it, and that movie's a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's being marketed as a horror, but it's an out-and-out comedy, and it was hilarious.
Let's see if this week's comedy horror can live up to that standard.
Office Romance isn't a horror? Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
I've got a story.
Okay.
A Toy Story.
I knew
it. Because, yes, you guessed it. It was announced that Taylor Swift has composed an original song for Toy Story 5. It is called
James Love Me.
I Knew You. Yeah, that's the subtitle. And we think it's for like a flashback of Jessie when like Jessie was with her.
Oh, God. You think they're going to do it again? You think they're going to break our hearts again with a Jessie song?
Well, and Taylor Swift, absolutely.
Flashback?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Scored by Tay Swizzle.
Are we going with Tay Swizzle?
Well, you've known her as long as I have, Helen.
Oh, I see. When's her wedding?
Let me just check the invite. sorry, I can't share that information
you
with
you. You were cordially invited to come no closer than 50 yards to this wedding.
But, I mean, at least she'd be able to make the wedding dress very quickly.
Because she's a Swift Taylor.
Wow.
Oh.
Dad joke.
Thanks, yeah. Dad. That really was.
It's upsetting.
Zack Snyder is going to be remaking Escape from New York, we have learned.
So the roulette wheel
yes.
has finally landed on Zack Snyder.
Yes.
Of people who might direct.
Who was it? Len Wiseman? No. Brett Ratner? No. Uh-huh. Breck Eisner? No. Robert Rodriguez? No. Leigh Whannell? No. It is.
Radio Silence, I believe, at one point as well.
No.
Really?
No. Yes. No, now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lots of people, but now it's going to be Zack Snyder.
Super awesome.
Yeah. How are we feeling about this? I guess it's intrigued.
So what's the film he's doing at the moment, which is the antidote to Rebel Moon? Like, he's doing a smaller film at the moment,
isn't
he?
We've been to Rebel Moon. I don't know.
Well, anyway, he's working on a film at the moment. This is what he's planning to do
after
that.
The Last Photograph? Is that the one he's doing?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. So I feel like that's going to be the palate cleanser to kind of remove aftertaste of Rebel Moon.
That's a very personal movie, The Last Photograph, he's been trying to make for donkey's years. And I've never seen him associated with this. This is exciting.
Yeah.
I know Zack Snyder gets a lot of shit.
Mm, sometimes rightly so, but he's also made some great movies. And lest we forget, fucking banging remakes, Dawn of the Dead. So,
Dawn of the Dead.
You know,
yeah.
And apparently, this is going to be more in that kind of a style. Like I've heard, it's like now going to be like a gritty kind of lots of locations and not the big sort of slick slathered in CG and everything kind of.
Hey,
approach.
He would want us to talk about the fact that they planted a cornfield at this point for Rebel Moon. So
I was thinking more about the kind of the Justice League.
Planted a cornfield on the LED volume.
I think this is actually not. If you're going to make Escape from New York, which apparently we are,
yes,
I don't think it's a terrible call to have Zack Snyder do it.
Once again. In case you don't know, Escape from New York is a 1981 John Carpenter movie in which Kurt Russell plays a badass mercenary called Snake Plissken.
Great name.
Who is sent into New York of, I believe, 1997.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And where it's essentially a walk-in, it's a prison.
It's now become
like
state-wide penitentiary for all the scum and lowlives and podcasters who have been thrown into this place. And the President of the United States of America, played by Donald Pleasance, his plane crash lands there. He says, get off my plane. And then Snake Plissken is sent in
to rescue him.
Mm-hmm. But he's a nihilist, is Snake Plissken, and it's really, really fucking cool. Yeah. And the sequel, Escape from LA, is legitimately one of the worst movies ever made.
Yeah, that is not good.
Yeah.
But I would cast Wyatt Russell as Snake.
He's very cool.
And I would cast Jared Harris as the American president.
Why?
Just feels right.
You're the Duke.
It just feels
You're
right.
You're the Duke. A number one.
I would cast Jared Harris as Snake Plissken and Wyatt Russell as the President of the United States.
I would take Ving Rhames.
Ooh.
He'd make a good Duke.
It could be a very, very cool movie. He's a great visualist, is Zack Snyder, so this could be right up his street. I mean, the first one didn't even shoot in New York. for obvious reasons. And they didn't have a lot of money. Yeah. And sometimes that shows.
James Cameron did some of the visual effects.
He did. Yeah. He did some of the matte paintings and whatnot.
Yeah,
as well,
the kind of the readout on the computer, the kind of the computer graphics thing that shows a map of New York. He created that using like cardboard boxes.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's,
there you go. Trivia.
Great talented. Score as well.
Great score. Yeah. Is it one of Carpenter's best? Is it Carpenter's best theme?
I think so.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Is it just because you love it a lot?
A little bit. I love that score.
I don't know. Assault on Precinct 13 is pretty good.
Also good.
It's an assault on Precinct 13.
Not Precinct 14. But Precinct 13. Oh, it's a shame they didn't include the lyrics in the film.
I know, it's a real shame. That's exciting. Maybe Zack Snyder will do the score as well. Maybe Taylor Swift can do a song for it.
Oh, can you imagine? That would be so good. And it should be called I Heard You Were Dead by Taylor Swift. And it would have all the snakes from Reputation in it.
All right, thanks. Okay, I've gone too far. I've opened the door once again.
You have opened the door.
All right, anything else you want to talk about real quick?
We should talk about the very sad death of Marshall Lucas.
Yes.
Who was, let's be honest, quite heavily responsible for Star Wars.
Oh, God, yeah.
She was a film editor. Chiefly, she was known, obviously, for Star Wars, and she worked up to Return of the Jedi. She worked on the two before that as well.
American Graffiti and THX
1138.
In case it wasn't obvious from her name, she was married to George Lucas.
She was married to George Lucas, but she also worked on like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore and Taxi Driver in New York. And if you didn't like George Lucas's later films as much, I'm just
that
saying.
That may be the reason why she didn't work on them.
She is credited a lot with giving Star Wars a structure and a shape, especially the attack run at the end.
It would not be the film that we know and love without Marcia Lucas. Obi-Wan dying, that was a note that she had in there.
Obi-Wan.
Because she was like, it's the passing of the generational torch. That's going to be a theme throughout the saga. I think she certainly took... I mean, if you've read his original screenplays for, you know, Starkiller and whatnot, it's absolutely fucking wild. So it has come a long way. And I think she was a moderating influence on some of his slightly more deranged ideas. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I think it lands so well is because of her influence.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Her influence on that cannot be overstated. And very, very sad indeed, she passed away at the age of 80, the great Marcia Lucas. Very, very quickly, it is New Empire Day today. It is Thursday, the 4th of June, the brand new issue of Empire is on sale right now in all good, evil, and virtual newsagents. We obviously have a show dedicated to that where I sit down with Nick the Semlian, and last month, Jimbo crashed as well to talk about that. It's called A Shameless Plug. So go and listen to that. We'll talk you through the magazine in excruciating depth. But right now, all we can say is a Spider-Man Brand New Day is on the cover, which is very, very exciting. Spoke to Tom Holland and Destin Daniel Cretton and all sorts of people about that movie, which is very, very cool and fresh and exciting. And I don't have a copy of the magazine with me to hand, and I didn't write anything for this issue, so I don't know what else
Supergirl.
Is in it.
Supergirl!
Thank you, Helen.
I wrote about
you
Supergirl.
Did. You wrote about Supergirl.
Awesome.
Excellent. You were on set, weren't you?
I was on set, yes.
You were on set of Supergirl. You were, in fact, the Supergirl.
Aw, thanks.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? No, it was Millie Alcock.
Yeah. She's pretty super.
Yeah.
Awesome. I did a pint of milk with Jermaine Clement.
Did you? I've read that. It's very funny.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah.
Jermaine Clement was sitting in that exact seat that you are sitting in, Dan, yesterday.
Really?
Because we have him and Nicola Walker on the Pilot TV podcast for their new show, Alice and Steve.
Ah. Did you start off by going, band meeting, Jermaine, present. No. Nicola, present.
I didn't do that.
Although it was a bit of an embarrassing interview because I was doing it on Zoom and I'd left a background on my Zoom, which I'd recorded a message for the... I can't believe I started this story. I'll finish it now. I recorded a kind of a present, like an intro for The Dark Knight Rises for the Toronto Film Festival. Okay. They're doing a Nolan season. And right. I left The Dark Knight Rises background on while I was interviewing Jermaine Clement. And he was very amused that I was sitting in front of a backdrop of a big giant sort of bat and disintegrating buildings and everything. So there you go. Terrible story. Cut it.
No. Keep it in. Also, do you remember last week when I said we don't have good stories?
How wrong you were. How wrong you were.
Wow.
Okay. Dan should prove me wrong, Simon.
This
Bob.
Is what happens when I speak Knight. Before I think. Yes.
What else is in the issue?
Oh, Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy Oliphant?
Yep.
Yes, that's right.
I went and read that article immediately.
I bet you did.
Or Timothy Mummerkill, as I prefer to call him.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm desperately waiting for Timothy Oliphant to be attached to some sort of project with Andy Serkis and then to leave that project. So then I can say, Timothy Oliphant packed his bags and said goodbye to the circus.
Oh.
That's the headline that I want to use one day. Thank you, Dan.
We can make this happen.
One day we can make this happen.
We should make this happen. I'm so impressed by that. I want to make this happen.
Yes. If only it were actually factually true.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we need to make that happen. Other great headlines that should become movies. Mulder on the dance floor.
Yes. Saturday Night Fever, the sequel, starring David Duchovny.
Oh my God, please, please, please make that happen. But yes, there's a lot of great stuff inside the issue. We'll delve into it in the shameless plug, but go out, rush out right now, buy the new issue of Empire Magazine. It's on sale right now. All good, evil, and virtual news agents, please pay our wages, you absolutely lovely people. See, Helen, I'm learning.
Well done.
Thank you. Shall we have a guest?
Yes.
Shall we have two guests?
Yes.
Shall we have Nicholas Galitzine and Camila Mendez, who are the stars of Travis Knight's Masters of the Universe?
Hurrah!
Hell yes.
Yes, let's do that, because this is, of course, as we will be discussing in the review section in just a tick, Travis Knight's live-action adaptation of the classic 1980s cartoon He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. That's what it was called, wasn't it, Dan? Yes. And
the cartoon was called that, yes.
The cartoon was called that. The film is not. They've lost the He-Man and...
And the toys were just called Masters of the
Toys were just called Masters. Yeah, it was all very, very confusing. But this is obviously set on an alien planet called Eternia and follows the fortunes of a young man called Prince Adam, who, when he holds aloft his magic sword
and said,
turns into a man who is, to quote the cartoon, controversial because it was on children's TV, ripped to fuck. He becomes He-Man. Makes no sense whatsoever. But it was a lot of fun if you were of a certain age, which obviously I am not. Shut up. And it's now been made into a film. It's coming out in cinemas right now and stars Nicholas Galitzine as Prince Adam, a.k.a. He-Man, and Camila Mendez as Teela, who is his partner in fighting space
childhood
crime?
Childhood friend
slash much more competent space crime fighter pal, I would say, in this movie. I spoke to them on Zoom the other day. Couldn't talk to them in London when they were here last week, but they ended up on Saturday speaking to them in Berlin. Now, we'll say Nicholas Galitzine is a big Arsenal fan. Huge Arsenal fan.
Oh.
If you are aware of football, you'll know that Arsenal were playing in the Champions League final later on that day. And so we talk about that a little bit. And Nicholas, I hope you're okay. I hope you're okay. Here we go. Nicholas Galitzine and Camila Mendez. Enjoy. How are you both?
We're good.
Slightly insane. But
slightly in a slightly goofy mood.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We're ready.
Excellent.
I love Empire Magazine, and I've always read Empire Magazine since I was a kid. So.
We were on the cover of it.
Yes, we were. I forgot about that. I did forget.
You were on the cover of Empire Magazine.
That's so cool. It's like I'm like enjoying it all again for the first time.
I was going to ask if you had framed that cover and put it on your wall, but clearly not.
I actually do. My mum like went out in the rain to get like all of the last copies from the newsagent. So I have like about 15 copies at home.
I love your mom.
Yeah, I know. She's a star.
Put them together and make like a massive portrait.
Yes.
When people come in.
Like an icon to myself. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Cool. Like a little shrine to yourself.
A shrine. That's what I was looking for.
That's the one. But before we get into talking about the film, Nick, is for people, this will be coming out on June 5th, this interview, but this has been recorded on the morning of Saturday, 30th of May. It is Champions League final day. You are a massive gooner. What the hell are you doing talking to me? Why are you not in Budapest?
Yeah. Why do you think he's in such a weird mood today?
Yeah, I'm skittish. I'm skittish. It's just, it's kind of a surreal feeling. And it's also like this, like, it's weird for so many reasons, but obviously like the fact that we even won the Prem was such an odd thing. And we've kind of been like basking in the glory of that, but forgetting we also have, the chance to kind of even supersede that because we've never won a Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the final
right.
Against Barcelona, we were winning. we completely capitulated.
Right.
When my Talia was like crying in front of... Yes, it's a great word. It's often used in football commentary. So
interesting.
But I remember when I was saying I went to the mirror and was like crying in front of the mirror. It was like that game that we lost.
Oh, wow.
So it's big. It's really, really big for us.
Yeah.
I'm predicting a 1-0 win for us, a jammy header from a corner in the 87th minute. And it's going to be beautiful. And I will have been, I would have predicted the future because this will come out after the fact.
Absolutely. By the way, nothing lights him up more than when he gets asked about this.
Really? It's just like, it's,
I just see like,
it's the longest relationship I've ever had is with this, like, it's toxic relationship with this football club, you know?
Yeah.
I as an Irishman, are you United or are you Liverpool?
I'm Liverpool, but my wife's a Gunner. So she's actually going to the parade tomorrow and she's hoping that there'll be two shiny cups being held aloft.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
One dream. There was a plan for us to all go to like a beer garden to watch it, but I was like, I think I need to be alone.
That's not happening anymore.
I just don't.
This is how you tell me.
I just don't like who I become when I watch Arsenal, you know? Like,
I am very much the same. I've had to step away from Liverpool games quite a lot.
There you go.
It turns me into a raging monster. Camila, I don't want to assume, but of course, you know, someone with a Brazilian heritage, are you into football? Is this.
Listen, I'm into it when it's the World Cup, but I don't know anything about. You know, individual leagues and
you don't want to
like
talk
that.
About anyone in particular, any players?
No.
Cool.
No, but I like, it's funny though, because when the World Cup happens, like all of a sudden I'm obsessed with soccer and I get really into it.
Oh, there's your first mistake. I mean,
why?
Soccer.
Oh.
Football.
Futebol.
Futebol.
I will say soccer is a British term.
I know, which is kind of really bizarre.
So who's making the mistake now?
Interesting.
Oh, you had to go there. You had to undercut me.
Wow,
I
want to
reclaim
you.
Soccer. I think we should reclaim soccer as a British term.
You're just playing both sides now.
Very much so. But anyway, listen, enough about football for the time being. I'm going to try to take your mind off the final that is happening in 6 hours and 9 minutes. I do not want to remind you of that, the enormity of what might happen in 6 hours and 9 minutes. Uh-huh. Camila, your dad in this movie, Man-at-Arms, is played by Idris Elba, also a big Arsenal fan.
Guna. Right? Also a Guna.
That's the last time.
And we found our way back. Wait, is Gunnar an Arsenal fan?
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah.
That's what they call them?
Yeah.
Well, Arsenal are called the Gunners, and then so their fans have, it's been kind of mutated into Gunners over there.
Got it. Okay.
So there you go. But Idris is your dad in this movie, but he's a dad that you're often disappointed by.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to be disappointed by Idris Elba? Is that the hardest acting challenge of your life?
Honestly, a little bit, because he's far from a disappointment. He's the best man ever. He's just such a light. Yeah, I'd say he's like the coolest man in the cast, strongest, most intelligent.
Would you say he's the he-manest man?
I would say so. He's the man. He is the man, you know?
He's a he and a man. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say.
I would say so.
I don't disagree. sad truth of life, really. If only he had blonde hair, he would have been a shoe-in for his
Why do I feel like he'd pull it off?
he would kill it. Are you kidding me?
Of course, Nick, you don't have blonde hair, so that was a big old.
I know that's actually it's kind of trippy because I was a blonde kid and I've been blonde.
Were you?
Yeah, I was, and I've been blonde so much in my career at this point that I always forget. Why am I so like turned away from?
Yeah,
this?
Sorry. Hello.
I was like,
ever since I started talking about Idris,
I think I just like pivoted away. I forget that I'm not a natural blonde sometimes. But yeah, I was a blonde kid. How strange.
Wow. Okay.
Strange.
Muy estranje.
What language was that?
That was Spanish.
Muy qué?
Estranje.
Estranje.
Sí.
It almost sounded German at the second half.
Yeah.
You were like, estranje.
When in Berlin, do with the Berlin.
When in Berlin, speak Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Romans.
Berlignol, as they say.
Yes.
And for the non-Spanish speakers amongst us, who obviously aren't me, I'm hugely fluent. What did you just say?
I just said very strange.
Very strange.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you were saying something. I was blonde or something like that. I was very blonde as a child, but no, very strange. I get that. Okay. Fair enough. But there's one scene I wanted to talk about in particular. I spent a fair amount of time with Travis the other day. We did a big Empire screening of the movie.
Wow.
And we talked about the moment in the movie, the first moment in the movie where Adam says the words, you know, the words, right, those words. And Travis said that the first time you said, "I have the power," as Adam, made him cry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He dropped to his knees and he wept.
Yeah.
He sobbed. And we couldn't tear him from the floor.
We had to shut down that day.
Yeah. It was like a sort of like a white light.
Yeah.
Like shot. And then there was doves.
Mm-hmm.
There was loads of doves and there was fire. Yeah. Can I just say, have you seen Mission Impossible 2?
What?
No, is it 2? What's the one with that amazing Scottish actor? Like, randomly in one of the Mission Impossibles, there's like Tom Cruise is like, he's suddenly like knows everything's like a flying kick.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that like bob. And then there's always like doves behind him and fire. And it's like, it's not in keeping with any of the other Mission Impossible movies.
Right.
Is it 2?
It's Mission Impossible 2.
Okay.
It's a John Woo movie and John Woo.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
How does this lead back to?
So it was exactly like Mission Impossible
2. Got it.
That's what it was like.
Right.
And I said, "Travis, this is just, I'm just an actor." And he said, "No, you're not.
You're God.
You are the actor."
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he threw up.
When are you going to drop the bit? You're just going to keep doubling down.
Yeah.
No, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. He cried, then he threw up, then he exploded. He had to be stitched back together again. It's one of those things. Camila, that moment, obviously you were present for it as well. If you had to compare Nick saying...
I wasn't present for it.
You weren't present for it? No.
When you said the words...
You weren't? Yeah,
she was just a little tired that day, so she asked to go home early.
I wasn't working that day.
Was your double? Who was in the background? No, you must have been.
They didn't have any of us in the background. That was like a very singular moment.
Oh,
and they didn't shoot it. They didn't shoot it the day that I was there. Or maybe they shot it before.
Yeah, actually, you might be right.
And
I'm going to give you a real answer. I'm so sorry. What do you want to know? What was it like?
Just what it was like, you know, shooting, you know, saying those words, but also the reaction, Travis's reaction, you must have been slightly perplexed by, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't perplexed because it was something I'd thought about a lot, but it was not something that I really wanted to rehearse because for my He-Man, in that moment, it's much more than just an incantation to sort of transform physically. You know, it really is a sort of a moment of true self-belief and kind of washing away you could even say like self-hatred and a lack of belonging and you know, all of these sort of intrusively negative emotions that he kind of felt, you know, both being on Eternia and on Earth. And so I really just wanted it to come out very sort of emotionally and true. And so it was quite emotional for me. And so then, you know, afterwards, Travis came from behind the monitor and we had a hug and that's when he exploded.
That's when he exploded.
Into a beam of light.
I do remember now. I just had a memory come back to me. And I, because, you know, we obviously had to shoot the Adam days separately from the He-Man days because they were two different looks.
Yeah, true.
So we shot all the Adam stuff.
Yeah.
And then the next day we started with you as He-Man.
Yeah.
And I think we started with your transformation.
Mm.
And I was in hair and makeup and my makeup artist had a live feed of set. And I remember she's like, "Do you want to see it? Like, they're shooting it now." And I remember watching it. I can't believe I forgot this.
Yeah.
But I watched it on her iPad.
And you were like?
I was like, "It's fine. Maybe it'll be better with music."
Camila, if you had to compare that moment to any of the Mission Impossible movies, which one would you compare it to?
The second one, probably.
Yeah,
the second one.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly
right. Mission Impossible.
Flying doves, motorcycle chases, high kicks.
The doves, for sure.
Yeah.
Flying hair, the whole kit and caboodle. Amazing. I've got to let you guys go in a second. But
no, don't tell me you wasted all your time.
No, this has been joyous. And
it's been 15 minutes?
Nearly. But I'm not one.
Because it's been such a treasure.
Yes. I'm bringing the interview to a close.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't need those last.
They've just told me I have another 25 minutes, but I'm saying, no, guys, we are good. No, but
you can't tell Nick that we have 15 minutes because then he thinks he can do a 5-minute long bit about Mission Impossible 2.
He's like, I've got a tight 10 on Mission Impossible 2. This is going to be
like,
amazing.
Sweet.
I've been workshopping this bit for late night TV. Let's give it a go.
Oh my God. I've literally had someone text me in the chat saying no more questions. So I think
no more questions, please.
that I'm afraid to say is it. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you guys. I will say, obviously, because this is going out next week, I'm going to do two outros. Thanks very much for this. It's been an absolute pleasure. And Nick, congratulations on Arsenal winning the Champions League.
Yay!
And here's the other one. It's been an absolute pleasure. And Nick, commiserations on Arsenal losing the Champions League.
That was hard to watch.
And on that note, thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, mate. Nice talking.
Okay, that was Camila Mendes and Nicholas Galitzine, stars of Masters of the Universe. And now it is time to talk about that movie because it is reviews time. Talking about the films that are out this week in the multiplexes and on your sofa plexes. This will be on your sofa plexes soon, Jimbo, because it's an Amazon MGM film, which means it'll be on Prime Video soon-ish.
It will.
But right now it's in cinemas, Masters of the Universe. What did we make of it?
What did we make of Marcy? I'm very, very conscious that Dan is sitting next to me and wrote the feature for the magazine.
And Helen wrote the review.
Yeah, I don't want to get a sword of power in the back. But yes, this is Travis Knight's film. It adapts I was going to say the toys, but it's kind of more, it does adapt the toys, but it embodies the spirit of the 80s cartoon. Like, this is a film that is for, I would say, broadly two demographics. And one of them is 6 to 10 year olds. And the other one is men in their mid-50s, essentially. And those are, broadly speaking, who this aims at, because a lot of the gags...
Whoa.
Yes, Chris.
Mid-50s?
Okay, early to mid-50s. Late 40s to mid-50s.
Yeah, thank you.
There we go.
Thank
is that okay?
All right. Keep going down.
Mid to late 30s, 20s,
yes,
teenagers.
There we are.
Really,
there
that's
we are.
It. There we go. So it leans into the aesthetics of the comic. It is, as you said, the story of Nicholas Galitzine's Prince Adam, who is exiled from Eternia as a boy, ends up on Earth working in HR, because of course he does, until he holds aloft a magic sword, which it takes him a couple of decades to locate. Ultimately gets the power of He-Man, returns to Eternia to try and reclaim his birthright from the evil Skeletor. And you can tell he's evil because his face is a literal skull.
He also literally says, I'm a villain.
Yeah, he is a villain.
There's not much nuance.
Yeah, he leans into it. It is apparently Jared Leto. It doesn't look like Jared Leto. It doesn't sound like Jared Leto. It could basically be Dan. It isn't Dan. It is Jared Leto. He is the villain. But it also includes such He-Man staples as, oh my God, Roboto, Fisto, Triclops, Trapjaw, Beastman, Mechanek,
Spike Orr.
Right, all of these guys that you had little toys of and were deeply fucking stupid toys. And they were, let's be honest, they were stupid toys. And I had all of them, I loved them. Even Battle Cat, you know, all of this stuff. I loved the cartoon as a kid. I had loads of the figures, where they had their little waist twisty action where you can make them punch each other. Genuinely genius. So, speaking as the late 40s to early 50s demographic, one of the two things this is aimed for, it hits all the notes I wanted it to hit, in that it is nostalgic. Everything you think about when you think of the toys is in here. Everything you think about with the cartoon is in here. It has the aesthetic of the cartoon, the atmosphere of the cartoon, the sensibility of the cartoon. And I think its main influences honestly seem to be the cartoon and recent memes based on the cartoon. Like, a lot of meme humor kind of feeds into this film. What I think he's done that's very smart, which the Dolph Lundgren Masters of the Universe film did not do, is they try to kind of make it feel real, make it feel believable, make it fit into what we understand of as reality. This film makes no attempt to do that. It leans into the fact that it's deeply fucking stupid, and it has a lot of fun with that. And honestly, I think it might end up being divisive, but I definitely think it was the way to go with this, because you just have a kind of goofy grin on your face all the way through the film, which I think works really well. The only thing I think works slightly less well is the actual narrative story here, I think, skews surprisingly young for me. I thought it would be quite teen-aimed. I think it's actually very tween-coded. And I think the gags are quite funny, but never hugely funny. We mentioned Honor Among Thieves, the Dungeons and Dragons film earlier. Yeah. Genuinely really funny, fun for all ages. I think this doesn't have that wit. This film thinks it's something between Thor Ragnarok and Honor Among Thieves. I think it's closer to Flash Gordon a little bit at times in terms of its demographic awesome. And its sensibility. Yeah, I was like, this is the best film ever.
This is still a recommendation.
Right. No, but it is. And like, I moaned about this when I came out a little bit, but all in all, I genuinely did have a good time with this. I thought it was fun. It's like, what, 2 hours 20? It's over long.
It's a little bit long.
It could definitely lose half
that
an hour.
That flew by.
Did it? But, and I think the moments where it loses its sense of stupidity and playfulness and tries for emotional sincerity, I don't think that necessarily works. They maybe should have skipped over that. But broadly speaking, I had a pretty good time with it.
So I wrote the review of this. I went 3, but it's a very high 3. I flirted with a 4, if I'm honest, because I just had a really lovely time watching it. I do think there are bits where it lags. There are jokes that are, like you say, pleasant, but not laugh out loud hilarious, which I think you're right. Dungeons and Dragons and Thor Ragnarok frequently were laugh out loud hilarious.
Genuinely.
This is gently funny, though, throughout. And I think it's the kind of thing which could become my small nephew's entire personality when he sees it. You know, I think it could really, really hit big with that sort of 8 to 12 kind of target audience, because it is really well meant and warm-hearted, and it's silly about the silly stuff, and I think that's 100% the right decision, because these are ridiculous characters objectively, and you cannot be too grim dark with this stuff.
No.
I also think we should mention the Daniel Pemberton score is off the charts. Yeah. Great.
He
is
Brian May plays the guitar on it.
Brian May doing the guitar. I mean,
howling 80s solos.
They do go a little bit far with that, for my money, because they literally use one of the songs that Queen did for Highlander, which it was a bit like, I feel like that's stolen valor.
And they take the one line of lyrics that vaguely sounds like the title of this film, but crucially is not the title of and they keep playing it on repeat.
They sort of riff. It's a remix, you know, they play with it quite a lot. But anyway, I think the music is great. I think it looks pretty great. A bit of a CG sheen, but that almost makes it look cartoony to me, which I quite liked. And also, like, Camila Mendes is great. We have Idris Elba as Man-at-Arms, and I loved him. I thought he was fantastic.
He's great in it, isn't he? Yeah.
But Gallitzin was the real breakout star for me. I have seen lots of his previous stuff, you know, Red, White, and Royal Blue. He was very effective. He's good in The Idea of You. He is good in lots of the stuff I've seen, but I wasn't excited about him being He-Man.
You've been a Gallit skeptic, haven't you?
I have been a bit of a skeptic, and I just found him very goofy and charming in this. He's a real doofus.
And that's the key.
That's why it works. Mm. Yeah.
When he's actual He-Man.
even when he is. And he does have these fight scenes where he suddenly becomes really effective as a fighter, and you sort of buy that this is the kind of almost Shazam level transformation that He-Man does. But it seems like almost a completely different person from the doofus who was there just a second ago. I kind of liked that. I thought that was really pretty effective.
I'm just saying they should have gone with the Pageboy haircut. Cowards.
Dan?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I thought it was a blast. I would have gone 4, Helen. I mean, I'm going to say I would have committed to 4. Oh. I'd have just gone for it. I thought it just, for me, I mean, obviously I am that person of that age, so the nostalgia got me. You know, it was like my memory of playing with the toys and seeing the cartoon, but updated and treated both reverently and irreverently. I mean, I think to treat it reverently, you've got to be irreverent.
Yes.
You've got to, it is like nobody, I mean, like Master of the Universe only exists because Mattel turned down George Lucas for Star Wars. And then they saw the success that the Star Wars toys had, and they went, okay, what can we do that would be like, have the success of Star Wars? And hence, you've got monsters and swords and axes and barbarians and robots. They created the cartoon just to sell the toys. But the reason that the cartoon always has a little moral message at the end was to kind of, there was criticism of the cartoon for just selling toys, and it's just like, it's just violence to sell toys. So they put the little moral message, usually spoken by Orko or He-Man, to kind of like, you know, give it some kind of justification.
Don't slice each other up with swords.
I mean, it's like, you know, don't take shortcuts to try and achieve success. I mean, you know, don't read books. That was one of them. You should read books. Don't do drugs and all that kind
That's
of stuff.
That's very wise.
He-Man really looks like a reader.
Yeah. I mean, he is, though. He's, you know, he's a Renaissance He-Man. But I mean, that, but again, that's kind of the nice message of this movie, is that it's kind of tackling with the, what were the ideals of masculinity back when those toys first came out. You know, it, it does kind of deal with that in a similar but not the same way that Barbie kind of dealt with, you know, the experience of women in the world today, as opposed to what it was at the time that the toy came out. So it, it sort of mirrors that. And it is, I do think it's kind of weirdly, it is like a mirror movie to Barbie, appropriately, because they're both Mattel toys. So it does have that going on, and I think that's explored quite interestingly. But I just like jokes about fisting goblins.
Yeah, there literally is a line where it's like, give them head, Ram Man.
Yeah. I mean, that's I'm a simple person. I just want fisting goblins and good. And actually, the action, the choreography,
it's cool.
Was superb. I thought. I mean, just like just real proper kind of smash mouth. Really, kind of you feel every blow.
All right, 3 stars then. 3 stars for, 4. Thanks, Dan. 3 stars for Masters of the Universe. Next up is the return of another long lost icon from our screens, Hell's Bells. It is, of course, Anna Faris and Regina Hall in Scary Movie, which sees the return to the franchise of the Wayans brothers after an absence. They weren't around post Scary Movie 2. Hell's Bells?
Yeah.
You've seen this movie?
Yeah. On a rainy Tuesday morning, uh-huh. Which honestly, I think I should have got hazard pay of some kind. I don't think it's fair. Yeah, I went to see this, and it's it's bad. It's really bad.
Are you a fan of anything in the Scary Movie franchise? Or you know what?
When they announced this one, and when we first talked about it on the podcast, I remember thinking, maybe I was wrong all those years ago. Maybe I was too harsh on it. You know, maybe it has something to say. People talk with affection about these films. People remember little jokes quite fondly. Maybe I was the asshole and these are good films, or at least films with nuggets of gold within them. And then I saw the trailer for this and I was like, no, no, they always sucked. I was right. And now I have seen this film and I maintain that view. They have always sucked.
Yeah.
And I have been right about that from the first one. However, there are some people who are good at their job in this film. Okay. So I do want to give them credit where it's due, because yes, Faris can still act. She is good. She is playing her Cindy, of course, not to be confused with Sydney Prescott. Cindy Campbell is the heroine of all these films. She is now, wouldn't you know it, living in a heavily fortified house. When her daughter comes back to town because she's been targeted by Ghostface, and her younger daughter, Tuesday, has actually been stabbed by Ghostface already, and she has to swing back into action with Brenda, Regina Hall's character, and try and track down and stop this new Ghostface killer, not to be confused with Ghostface killer, and that is a joke that they make in the movie, and that's one of the 4 good jokes in the movie. And you might think, well, 4 good jokes isn't a bad ratio, but it is when there are this many jokes. Okay, there are a lot of what I think are meant to be jokes in this movie, and all but 4 of them fail.
That's impressive.
And I cannot stress to you just how boring it is to watch joke after joke after joke fail in front of you. I did not enjoy the experience. Apart from those 2, there are a lot of Wayans in this movie. And
they've turned the Wayans against us.
They have. There are so many of them. So you've got, you have literally like the 3rd generation. It's not just, we're not just talking like Marlon and Sean here. Damon Wayans Jr. gets roped into this out of some sense of family responsibility, I guess, because he is way better than this material.
Oh, Wayans better than this.
Greg material. Wayans, Kim Wayans. I don't understand what they're all doing.
I have a question. My question is this. Like, it feels like, and I detest these movies more than I can possibly express in words. In fact, all of these kind of spoof parody type things. But
that's not fair. Some spoofs are good spoofs. These are bad
spoofs.
Well,
the parody ones in particular, I had an epic movie scare, all of that.
Oh, those are terrible, but you're dismissing some of the greatest comedies ever made.
Yeah. I'm not thinking Naked Gun, I'm not thinking Top Secret. That's not where I'm going with this Airplane. But my question with this is, like, this has historically been lampooning the horror movies of the era whenever these come out. And it feels like we live in a time where it's incredibly fertile ground. So if you were ever going to make a scary movie and make it good, now is the time to do it.
Correct. It would be, wouldn't it? Yeah. They do, to be fair, like, they're very up to date with their references. They must be absolutely killing themselves that, like, Obsession and Backrooms have just done what they've done.
Yeah.
But I just find the hit rate so, so low, and so many of the jokes were just flat. There's one of the sort of new generation, you know, obviously there's the kind of, they're doing the reboot quill. Of course, it's a rebooty quill here. They're doing the reboot quill thing. And
of course, Chris is laughing. This is so aimed at you.
But the...
you're so basic.
Why didn't you take the 10 a.m. Tuesday
I had an interview which then got, I was meant to do it, and then it got moved. And I actually have a soft spot for
they're not
great movies, well. But if you go on YouTube and you look at individual scenes from certainly the first three Scary Movies, there are some really funny bits in those movies.
Like I say, there's four good jokes.
Sounds great.
Okay. Anyway, I don't know what the Empire review is.
We've given it two.
We are generous people.
Two stars. Two stars then for Scary Movie. Last big review this week is of Office Romance, which pairs Brett Goldstein, who also co-writes with J-Lo.
He doesn't co-write with J-Lo.
No. He
it
doesn't,
pairs
no.
him with J-Lo.
Yeah. Although he does co-write with someone called Joe Kelly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, I guess, Joe K?
Jake?
Oh, is Joe Kelly a pseudonym for J-Lo?
Don't believe so.
Possibly.
Who knows?
My God.
Yeah.
She really is a multifaceted talent.
She really
talent.
Is.
She's indeed.
Great, isn't she?
I love her.
Who's taking this one?
Woman.
Shut the fuck up, Dan. Who's taking this one?
I think it's James.
Okay.
Oh, God. It is 2026, but you wouldn't know it from this film by design, because it's an old school rom-com of the kind we don't see very often these days, let alone with J-Lo in it, queen of the old school rom-com. This is, as you say, co-written by Brett Goldstein, and it stars him as a man named Daniel Blanchflower, an Englishman in
now,
New York.
Do you get that reference? I suspect
that's
you wouldn't.
A footballer.
It's a footballer.
No.
Danny Blanchflower was
really?
A footballer?
Brett Goldstein's a big Spurs fan.
Right.
And Danny Blanchflower is a Spurs and Northern Ireland
so
legend from
Brett
the 1960s.
Brett Goldstein's having a better week than Nicholas Galitzine.
Well, I don't know that he is, because Arsenal still won the title. But
no,
yes, absolutely.
That. Anyway, he plays okay, Daniel Blanchflower. He is an in-house lawyer at an airline, Cruise Air. Essentially run by CEO Jackie Cruz, played by Jennifer Lopez. They... shall we say, meet on the job, steady.
They have a meet cute.
They have a literal
have you spelling meet
cute. Yes, indeed. Oh, he is our in-house counsel, very in-house, and steady.
Oh,
and they have, we should say, the Cruise Air have a zero tolerance policy to inter-office fraternizing. There is no nookie on the job. You do not shit where you eat, as she points out. And there's a big lawsuit which kind of hinges on that. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I'm sure Helen was tearing her hair out from a legal perspective, but that's neither here nor there. They have chemistry. He gets a massive erection in her presence, and they start an illicit office romance with disastrous and hilarious consequences. So look, this, among other things, has an incredibly deep bench of great people in it. So Brett Goldstein and J-Lo, obviously brilliant in it. But this also has Bradley Whitford is in this. Edward James Olmos is in it. Jodie Whittaker's in it in a really small role. Betty Kilpin plays Jackie's right-hand woman at work, takes an instant dislike to Daniel. But honestly, this is very much the J-Lo and Brett Goldstein show, because the two of them are fantastic. They've got great chemistry. They look fantastic together. He's a lot of fun in this. I had a really good time with this film. I think it's very sweet, and it's got a lot of heart. And it kind of reminds you why rom-coms are actually a lot of fun to see, especially at the cinema. And it makes me wonder why there aren't more of them.
Mm.
This is obviously a streaming thing, but I actually quite enjoyed these kind of collective rom-com experiences, because there's a real feel-good vibe going on there. I don't think this is as good as it maybe could have been. I think there are some incredible Brett Goldstein flourishes in here. There is, as I've said, a brilliant erection joke. There is a... let's just say there is a pregnancy scene that has to be seen to be believed, and there is a scene using the C-bomb, which I think is quite...
almost more than it was used one of the times he was on the podcast.
Indeed, yes. Which, again, that feels pure Goldstein, and it's great. But equally, there are times when it feels, I don't know, maybe a little bit too gentle, a little bit too middle of the road, and you've got to wonder whether... he was kind of pushed into that place. So I feel like the kind of the Goldsteininess is when this is at its absolute best. So, and when it loses its teeth, it becomes slightly more vanilla.
So this is a Netflix movie.
It is a Netflix movie.
Maybe Netflix were saying to him.
Yeah.
And it's directed by Ol Parker.
It's directed by Ol Parker, yeah, who did like what, Mamma Mia 2 and Ticket to Paradise. So I think definitely there was something in here that was maybe edgier, and you see hints of this throughout the film. But then there are other bits where it feels a little bit more generic, I think. Mm. But you know, those criticisms aside, he's fantastic in it, she's fantastic in it. And honestly, I had a really good time with it.
I had a nice time. I did get that sort of unevenness of tone that sort of took me out of it a little bit. You know, you've got the C-bomb scene,
yes,
which I think is quite confronting for a lot of people, especially Americans. And then on the other hand, you have this really ludicrous scene where she has an unguessed up fetish for British stuff. And you're just like, well, how does that make sense with anything else that's going on here? This doesn't feel like this woman at all to me. So it's just stuff like that just felt bizarre. And, you know, Jodie Whittaker's character, wildly underdeveloped, didn't really understand that situation very well at all. Amy Sedaris turns up and is underused. Roger Bart turns up and is really fun, but is underused. You know, Bradley Whitford, I would also say, underused. Betty Gilpin can never be overused, but she was at least got a bit more screen time. So I had fun with it, but I think it's like more for me in the 3-star camp than, you know, some of Brett Goldstein's other work. Like the best scenes in Ted Lasso, the best episodes of Shrinking are like 4- or 5-star masterpieces. I think he's incredible. But I think this is much more, you know, good but not great.
Yeah, I think so.
He is, I think, one of the great romantics working in film and TV today.
Yeah.
I think he's a really romantic guy.
I think
he's, and she is a genuine rom-com queen. I will defend The Wedding Planner as a great rom-com until the day I die. I think it is a fantastic rom-com, and that's just one of her many.
She's just great.
She's so good at it. So I did have a really nice time.
Yeah. Do we have an official Empire review for this one yet?
I don't know if we have the copy for you. I suspect it's a 3. I think it's a,
I think it's a three. I wrote a review for someone else and gave it 3, so
Judas.
That would be my...
Well, I'm a man of integrity, so I'm going to give a 17 stars. 17 stars then for Office a Romance. Hey, I had an Office romance. I met my wife here at Empire.
Oh, I thought you were looking at me when you said that. Because we did watch porn together that time.
We did, but James, you'll always be for me the one that got away. But anyway, 3 stars then for Office Romance. Very, very quickly, Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
Savage House.
Yeah, this is a film that looked pretty up my street. So it stars Richard E. Grant and Claire Foy, already off to a great start, in a sort of, it's early Georgian, actually. It looks like The Favourite, but it's a few years later than that. They are minor nobility, let's say. She's a lady, he married upwards. And they get the opportunity of their lives to kind of restore their fortunes, which have fallen on very hard times, because they are invited to host the Duke and Duchess of Devonshire, who were, of course, a big noise at the time. So they start basically spending money like water and scheming and generally bending over backwards to accommodate these people who they hope will turn their fortunes around and basically save their day, because he's been dealing in, well, less than legal ways to keep them afloat so far. So this is written and directed by Peter Glanz. This is a really weird one because it's kind of billed as a comedy. The problem for me is that this becomes unbelievably depressing. I think this is kind of the, if you wanted The Favourite to be more like Requiem for a Dream, that's basically what this becomes. I just find it unrelenting, like people just making bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, all the way through the film. You kind of know where it's going to go, or at least I felt I did, and it went where I expected it to go, and I just didn't want to go there. I didn't want to go on that journey. I think it's impeccably performed. I think it's Richard E. Grant and Claire Foy are terrific. I think it is beautiful looking. It's incredibly well shot. The costumes, all that is amazing. But it's also so deeply grotesque and like scatological and just gooey and unpleasant and horrible and just genuinely sick-making to watch. I had a horrible time, despite the great performances and the way it looks.
I'm actually sounding quite interested in it.
I think it might be more you than me, Dan.
Your description
and I say
of it
that
is making
no
me
disrespect.
Think that it might be something.
I liked it a lot more than Helen.
Yeah.
I just wanted it to be over and it wouldn't end.
There were other people in the office who were like, "Are you going to see Savage House?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they basically prayed for my soul, and I was like, I had a perfectly good time. I thought it was funny. It is obviously deliberately, intentionally grotesque, but I had a good time with it. You know, these are awful characters and I wanted to see them being awful. So, hey, that's just me. But we gave it 2 stars. 2 stars in for Savage House. And if you want another period drama, I would recommend Kellen Jones's Mad Fabulous, which is also out this week and stars Callum Scott-Howells as a
a 19th century lord who was a real life figure who was incredibly flamboyant for his time and spent his inheritance like it was going out of fashion. And this is anchored by a sensational performance from Callum Scott-Howells, who was in It's a Sin as Henry Paget, Lord Paget, and Ruby Stokes is in it as well. Rupert Everett is there as his loyal butler. I don't think we have an Empire review. I'd go with high three in this one. So there you go. It's a week for high threes or low threes.
Apart from Savage
Eyes. Which sucks. Oh dear. Oh Lord. Don't upset Helen.
But anyway, movie, which also sucks.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Apart from those two, it's a week for high threes.
Okay.
And low threes. Anyway, on that note, that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by, I think it's going to be David Koepp, who is the writer of the new Steven Spielberg movie, Disclosure Day, and who will be coming into this studio tomorrow. But until then, until we meet again, until an auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from my three colleagues of such lethal cunning, one of whom has an interview in 6 minutes with a megastar. Goodbye, James.
Goodbye, Chris. Listen to the Pilot TV podcast for Jermaine Clement, Nicola Walker, and of course, Javier Bardem, who I am literally speaking to in 6 minutes for Cape Fear.
I had the Spanish actor in my pub the other day. He was causing all kinds of ruckus.
Have you barred him?
No, I told him he was welcome back anytime. It's goodbye from Dan Jolin.
Goodbye, goodbye. And also, the new issue of Senate is out this week as well, just if in case anyone wants to read about board games. There
see,
you go.
I don't mind when people plug their other stuff on the show.
Cool,
that's totally fine. You want to plug that?
I just took James's lead. He plugs
his
thing.
Oh, no, I cut all that stuff out, but yours
I'm going to stay in.
Yours I'm going to leave in.
Senatemagazine.com.
Okay, good stuff. Thanks, Dan. Goodbye, Helen.
Toodaloo.
And it's goodbye from me. I am off to lodge some papers with HR about my latest office romance.
Uh-oh. I don't work here anymore.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.